morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Douglas Nelson on behalf of the petitioner, Mr. Bashar Asmaro. Mr. Asmaro is a native and citizen of Iraq who fled his country on account of persecution related to his imputed political opinion, his Chaldean ethnicity, and his Catholic religion. The immigration judge denied all relief because the judge made an unreasonable determination that the respondent was not credible and that the respondent did not provide enough evidence of his identity. First, I'd like to speak about his identity.
Since you have a short time, that's what I'd like you to focus on. The credibility we see a lot of. This is a novel issue.
And by the way, I will reserve two minutes, Your Honor, if I may. Regarding the heightened standard which the judge applied to identity, that is not a standard which is found in the law. I think it's so ironic that the immigration judge would deny this respondent in part because he did not provide more evidence of his identity, because the respondent provided those documents to the government when he initially applied for asylum. The government acknowledged that they had received such documents. The judge acknowledged that such documents were frequently lost by the asylum office and not placed into the record of proceedings. Nevertheless, the judge denied him asylum because, in part, he didn't provide sufficient identity documents. However, that's not the standard. The regulations under Section 8 CFR Section 208 specifically state that uncorroborated but credible testimony by the applicant may be sufficient to sustain a burden of proof for asylum. This respondent, as we can later argue, did testify in a credible manner.
So let me ask you about that. Do you think the credibility that's referenced there is overall credibility or credibility as to identity issues?
I think the judge used both, Your Honor.
But what do you think the regulations or the commentary means? If you provide credible testimony, does that mean you have to have your full asylum application be credible, or does it just mean your testimony about identity needs to be credible in order to establish identity?
There are no specific instructions in the regulations of the statute which would give us an answer to that question. It's my personal opinion that it's referring to the overall credibility of the claim. Now, the respondent, though, and it must be remembered that I say the respondent, I mean petitioner. It must be remembered that many of these petitioners' first priority when they leave the country is to flee persecution and not to bring corroborative evidence with them. And so the law allows for them to testify without corroborative evidence, and so long as that testimony is credible, they can be accepted for asylum. This respondent not only testified in a credible manner, but he did provide additional evidence of his identity. First, there's the evidence that he spoke in the Chaldean language, which is a language specific to the Chaldean ethnicity, which is an entirely Catholic or Christian group. But second, he did provide an identity document which he had a copy of, and it was translated and provided to the court. Now, the only problem with that identity document is the date of birth. The respondent testified that at the border and throughout his proceedings that he was born on July 10th, 1978. However, his document records his birth as August 13th, 1978. When confronted with this conflict, he plausibly and consistently and credibly explained that he was born in a little village and his father took him out of the village to be registered for his birth, and that the Iraqi government registered his date of birth and recorded the date of registry on the same day. It's a simple and plausible explanation. When the judge was critical of the respondent in this regard, the judge was projecting an American or Western view as to how things should be recorded and how things should be treated and viewed in Iraq. He cannot expect, or it is unreasonable for the judge to expect, that things as they are done in America are done in every country. And that records...
Let's back up for a minute. Do you understand the BIA ruling to have made a separate... I mean, Judge McKeown sort of asked you this before, but... a separate ruling about identity at some sort of heightened standard? Is there a separate identity issue here that as to which we're applying a heightened standard for credibility or not?
No, Your Honor.
The case sort of referred to that possibility. The BIA doesn't seem to.
That's correct. I think the BIA dodged that question, and they came up with two other reasons why they would find that the respondent is not credible. And neither of those reasons are supported by the record, it's...
And they also don't have to do with identity, right?
That's correct. For example, the board says, at his credible fear interview, he failed to mention the death of his cousin. Well, that's not the purpose of a credible fear interview. The purpose of the credible fear interview is merely to establish eligibility for asylum. And I've included in our, it's included in the transcript, a copy of the credible fear notes. And never was he asked, were your relatives or cousins or other persons harmed? So that basis upon which the board relies is completely unsupportable and unreasonable. The board continues that the petitioner escaped on January 20th, 2000, before he was jailed, while in his hearing testimony, he stated that he was detained for 2 days. The respondent testified, and in his application for asylum, he stated that he was held in a Ba'ath Party office in a cell. Now, that may or may not be a jail. And so there's a distinction here. They're saying that that is a jail, when he only described it as a Ba'ath Party office cell, and that he was able to leave that Ba'ath Party cell before they took further action and took him to jail. And so the reasons that the board has provided are also not reasonable under the law. Now, one other big question that I think should be addressed is the respondent's demeanor. The respondent testified in a deliberate manner because the judge had repeatedly told him that these proceedings are important, and that if he is found to have a frivolous claim, he's going to be deported for the rest of his life. And the judge told him that he should pause whenever the interpreter interrupted him, and that he should wait for all the answers, for everything to be interpreted before he is to respond. And he followed those instructions. Indeed, in one point in his case, or during his testimony, he answered too quickly, and the judge instructed him not to do that. And so he slowed his responses. And then it's ironic that the judge would say that the petitioner's answers were not forthcoming, when in fact he was just merely being deliberate in his responses. Now, there's no evidence in the record that he was evasive or non-responsive to the questions. Indeed, he many times offered more information than was required of him. So he was attempting to give the court the full information regarding his claim. I have about 2 minutes left, and so I will...
Did he make an illegal entry into the United States and then come back and present this?
No, Your Honor. That's a very key question, and it's... let me address it very quickly. The law says that if a refugee comes to the border and requests asylum, then that person must be taken into custody and given a credible fear interview. However, at that time, the government had established an asylum office on the border, and instead of taking the persons into custody, was adjudicating claims right there at the border and telling them to wait in Tijuana. That's why there was a group of Chaldeans in Tijuana. The government was inviting people to come to Tijuana, in essence.
So where is he living, in Tijuana?
He was in Tijuana briefly while he applied for asylum and that case was being decided. But before the case was decided, the government realized that they shouldn't be doing this, that the regulations required that these persons be taken into custody. And he went to the government and they accepted him into the United States and eventually paroled him on a bond.
At what point did he give them his documents, before or after that happened?
In his initial application, when he was in Tijuana, on a pro se basis, he filled out an application pro se and surrendered the documents. He was not represented
at the
time. In Tijuana?
They did it at the consulate office or through the consular or what?
Right at the border.
Right
at the border, there's a special cases office. Just before you get to inspection, you turn to the right, and that's where the office is.
Thank you.
Court, please.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Before I get to the analysis of the judge's decision, which is all that petitioner attacked in his brief, I want to turn to two findings by the board, which he only attacks for the first time here in oral argument, which were sufficient by themselves to have sustained a negative determination.
First of all, does the board, under the new regulations where the board isn't supposed to be making fact findings, Does the board get to do that?
Well, the board, what the board was saying was, we agree with the immigration judge. And particularly, we point this out. Yes, they can do that. At least I believe they can.
It's strangely worded. I mean, at some point, they say we agree with the immigration judge. And then they say,
We find
that he was not credible because at his credible fear interview, he failed to mention the death of his cousin, and he claimed that in his own case, he escaped. We find these are significant inconsistencies which go to the substance of the claim and are an adequate basis for an adverse credibility finding. So they seem to be saying sort of two things. First, we find it for the reason the judge says, and second, we find it independently for these two reasons. And I guess what I'm asking is the second one a legitimate – the board or the attorney general has sort of bound the BIA's hands at this point to not be making factual determinations, and isn't that one?
No, they were making that determination from the record. For example –
Well, it's from the record, but it was a factual determination.
They were making the determination from what was in the administrative record. It's the same thing as if this court, after listening to all the arguments in a case, comes up with a reason, as it sometimes does, comes up with a reason of its own to either sustain or reverse. Now, the two things, the first thing that the board found was a credibility determination. And what they said was that there was a conflict between what he said in his credible in his testimony before the asylum officer. And what he said, and you will find this at page 460. When was the last time you were arrested? January 2000, I escaped before I got to jail. You didn't say nothing about being held in a little office, but escaped before I got to jail. I had a friend help me flee. He told me they were coming for me. And then further down it says, then I heard I would still be arrested, so I fled. In other words, whereas he testified at the hearing that he was arrested, held for 2 days at this office. In his credible fear hearing, he said he got away before they nabbed him.
Was there testimony by the officer who heard this?
The record is here it's in the administrative record. It's the notes.
But I thought that generally.
In fact, if you will look at page 59. Of the excerpts of record that petitioner himself has put in. You'll find it.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I said, if you will look at page 59 of the petitioner's own excerpts of record, which he just finished explaining he put in so that this court would know what took place, you will find what I just quoted. Now, the second thing that the board found was that even if we accept his credibility, all he has shown was that he was held for 2 days and slapped around. He never did answer that. In his brief, I don't know, I lost the page of it.
Can I ask a predecessor question just for a moment? I gather you're not relying on there being any special.
Pardon me?
I gather that you're not relying on there being any special identity.
I will get to identity in a minute.
Okay.
But I just wanted to point out those two things. That basically what he said in his brief was, yes, all my life I've suffered all this prejudice, et cetera, et cetera. He made the blanket statement that he had suffered something horrendous which was worse than Chen, but he didn't specifically answer the board saying, no, you didn't. Now, in terms of identity.
What's he supposed to say? No, I already said it?
No, he should at least acknowledge what the board said. He didn't even say the board is wrong. The board made a finding that, what do you call it, that all I suffered was I was slapped around. But the point is, those are two things which by themselves, that and the credibility issue. Now, getting to the identity, I will point out that identity is an essential part of credibility. Because if you are not who you say you are, then the story that you tell is certainly open to question.
Well, that's true. And identity has always been considered part of the credibility,
yes.
Overall credibility finding. But the IJ seemed to suggest, and I don't think the government is relying on this, that there's some independent requirement in the statute that identity be proven and that it be absolutely proven by some different standard of proof.
Well, the IJ made that, he pointed out what was in the new regulation.
Statute, actually.
Yeah, or new statute. But when he got around to treating the, he was really treating it as part of credibility. And what he said, and basically what he said was that the conflict in regard to his birth date and the variation in his signatures raised questions about his identity. Now, I would like to point out that a negative credibility determination is not a finding that the applicant has not told the truth. The applicant has the burden of proof. His first burden is proving that what he says happened to him, in fact, did happen. Therefore, a negative credibility determination is simply a finding that he didn't carry that burden of proof. In other words, if it's an equipoise, maybe it did happen, maybe it didn't happen, maybe he is who he says he is, maybe he isn't who he says he is, he's not carried his burden of proof. And I would suggest that things like this variation in the birth dates and the signature variations are sufficient. Now, more to the point, the major part of the judge's determination was a demeanor evidence.
Well, before you get to that, I'm still puzzling over the identity issue, because if I look at the statute having to do with relation to identity, it talks really about the Attorney General doing things. Like the Attorney General can ask you for fingerprints and you can ask for a photograph. And it says you can't get asylum until identity has been checked against appropriate records. None of that language suggests anything in that regard on the part of the applicant.
Well, the judge pointed out this regulation, but I am suggesting that when he actually got around to dealing with identity, he dealt with it the same as the rest of the credibility. That
you're essentially saying we don't need to worry about the statute having any special effect.
Well, the judge might have said something wrong, but that doesn't mean it's...
the statute is irrelevant.
I would say yes. And we're not... let's put it this way. I am not relying on the statute.
Okay, so basically... Then
I asked you that about 5 minutes ago. If you just said that, we could have.
Pardon? Did you? I'm sorry. I didn't understand.
Why are you relying on it?
I didn't understand your question.
So, if the statute is irrelevant, then is your position that identity, that he bears the burden on identity under the normal burden of a petitioner?
Yes, precisely.
Okay.
Now, I would. Looks like I still have some time left.
Yeah, 15 seconds.
Wow. This court has been very clear that, and I cited all the cases in our brief, that the appellate court, the court itself dealing with a cold record, cannot make the demeanor determinations, that it credits the determination, providing that the judge explains his reasons for it, and of course the judge did here, and that these reasons are not obviously wrong. I'll give you one, if I can, one quick little thing.
Give us one quick little thing, even though you're out of time.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. I will illustrate it this way. If I were to answer your question like this, or if I were to answer it like this, it would appear the same way in the transcript. In other words, the way a question is answered is something only the judge is able to tell. The record does not, the way it comes out in the record does not allow you to make a determination there. Does not give you the basis to make a determination there.
I think we have your point. Thank you. You have 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Can you tell me why, assuming credibility, there was sufficient evidence of past persecution?
Said again, I didn't hear you.
Assuming credibility, why was there a sufficient evidence of past persecution?
Well, it wasn't merely just 2 days of detention and beating. Rather, he has been harassed his entire lifetime because of his Chaldean ethnicity and his Catholic religion.
But none of that would amount to persecution under the statute, right?
Well, no. Under Mashiri, M-A-S-H-I-R-I, threats of persecution which are backed up by other events are sufficient for to establish past persecution.
And what were the threats of persecution? I thought there were threats, things like your life's going to be wasted or something like that.
No, he said and testified to and wrote in his declaration that they threatened to kill him if he didn't obey their orders, join the Ba'ath Party. And when he left their office, when he left that Ba'ath Party cell, he was under the understanding that if he were caught again and he were not a Ba'ath member party or a member of the Ba'ath Party, that he would be killed, disappeared, or jailed. Now, government counsel brought up the point.
So basically, your past persecution is the detention, how he was treated in detention, and the threats that were made at the end of detention.
Combined with the history of being threatened and the fact that...
Well, that's what I'm not understanding. You didn't give me any examples of the history of being threatened.
When he was a student, throughout his adolescent years when he was a student, he was repeatedly threatened by the Ba'ath Party to join their ranks.
Threatened with?
Well, that they would... I'd have to review that. But that's part of the record, but I don't have that in my fingertips. And the fact that he knew of other family members or persons who were harmed backed up those threats. Now, one very important point that the government brought up in the credible fear interview. The question was asked in the credible fear interview, when was the last time you were arrested? He answered it. He said, it was January 2000. So there was an arrest. And he testified that he was taken to a Ba'ath Party office and held in a cell. But, he continued, I escaped before I got to jail. That is not incongruent with his testimony or with his written application.
Thank you. I think we've got the briefs and the record. We'll have to go back and look at the record again on this. The case is submitted. Thank both counsel for your arguments.